You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Let's talk about hypersonic missiles and your concern. And I want to talk about next generation war. And I've got a little audio from the Commandant I want to play. You've written a little bit about hypersonic missiles. Tell me about it.
Well, to be honest with you, hypersonic missile technology, you know, hypersonic technology is a little bit of a misnomer because there are some conventional old-school legacy platforms capable of achieving hypersonic speeds, which is Mach 5 and better, right? Supersonic is Mach 1, hypersonic is Mach 5.
All right.
Right, so we're working on, we're already experimenting with scramjet engines. To make aircraft achieve hypersonic speeds. The SR-72 is theoretically supposed to be one of them once we ever have it. But what already exists are hypersonic missile platforms, particularly anti-ship missile platforms. And the reason why they're so dangerous to us is because they move too quickly for our missile defense apparatus to, number one, identify and engage with and intercept.
Okay.
So this is a real problem because when you look at a country like China,
right.
Our aircraft carriers are our only means of force projection that far out into the Pacific, right? At least in a short-term endeavor. That means that our aircraft carriers are our big stick.
Right.
Now, China's hypersonic anti-ship missiles have a range, in some cases, that exceed 1,000 miles. Their DF-21D can't quite make 1,000 miles. It's like 800,
okay.
And it's their most dangerous anti-ship missile.
Okay.
We can't counter these because they move too quickly to defend against.
Okay.
Our aircraft carrier aircraft have an operational range of only about 500 miles, like a 1,000-mile round trip, right? Our F-35s, our Super Hornets.
Got it.
What that means is that we can no longer put our carriers close enough to a Chinese or Russian coast to do anything with them.
Okay.
They've rendered our carrier warfare model obsolete right now.
Okay.
China's already got these missiles deployed. They started deploying them in 2010. There's questions about the targeting apparatus because they're moving so fast to targets out in the middle of the ocean. There's questions about their accuracy if they really could take out one of our carriers, if they could, if it's accurate enough. But we have to operate, we've had them for 8 years operationally. We've got to sort of assume that they've at least got some limited targeting capability.
Okay.
They've already tested it on Nimitz-sized models on land. They haven't done it on a moving target yet.
Okay.
So the U.S. government is seeing this capability gap. We can't put any force inside China's borders or Russia's borders with our carriers anymore.
Okay.
And we're invested. We are invested in super carriers. We've got more Ford class carriers on the way trying to build this 355 ship Navy, right? So right now we've got a couple different ideas to counter this capability gap. The first one is we're adding conformal fuel tanks to our Super Hornets in the Block 3 upgrade. That's just starting this month. It's going to add a few hundred miles to our Super Hornets. It still won't offset the gap, but it'll
help.
All right. Another project the Marine Corps is working on is hot loading F-35Cs inside area-denied spaces. Their idea, and I really don't love it, is to take heavy payload helicopters, fly them inside the Chinese-controlled territory to set up hasty airstrips.
Right.
For the most advanced fifth-generation fighter on the planet.
FARPs.
To land in these airstrips,
right.
To be refueled or rearmed, and then either go conduct more ops or make it back to the carrier that's outside the anti-ship bubble.
Okay.
Right? The third initiative that we're doing with these carriers is the MQ-25 Stingray initiative. Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and General Atomics are all competing to make a carrier-based drone. We don't have any carrier-based drones right now at all. We've got some experimental ones, but nothing operational.
Okay.
What they're trying to do is make a carrier-based drone that can be used as a refueler. So when an F-35 goes out there, it's only got a 1,000-mile range, but we're 900 miles away. The idea is that these drones would meet the F-35 on its way back to refuel it so it could finish the voyage home.
Got it. It's almost it's like your self-serve gas station. It's up there by itself,
exactly.
Orbiting. Okay.
We're trying to find any way we can to extend the range of our aircraft so that we can keep our carriers safe, but still use them the way we've always intended to.
All right. Now, Alex and I were having this conversation, and so it's going to get to a question of command and control. How do you acquire a target at 1,000 meters? So let me just play some audio from the Commandant. All right.
And the old adage of, see the battlefield. I learned that in Army school. See the battlefield. So if you want to see the battlefield, you got to have the high ground, and the high ground today is space. So I have some concerns about our ability, not just the Marine Corps, but the Joint Force, to be able to do the stuff that they need to do. I don't think it'll all go away, and I think it'll come back episodically. But if I were going to fight somebody that I knew had a requirement to be able to do communications or GPS or crypto timing or all the stuff we get out of space, I mean, that would be the first place. I consider it's a critical. That's the thing that we have to protect. You talk about centers of gravity. So I got a friendly center of gravity. I got to protect command and control. I got a critical vulnerability. It's my command and control and the way it's set up. So how do you protect it and then mitigate it if it's degraded? How do you make it resilient enough? And so we talked about that, and it was a good discussion. And in our training, we're working on that every time we go to the field. And part of it's simple. I mean, I know the Navy is doing a lot of stuff where they reduce their signature or eliminate it altogether to the best of their ability. I mean, exercises now, we'll just go out there. Because we've raised a generation of officers and a force that thinks that you're going to sit in a stationary COC and they're going to watch streaming video and going to have big flat screen TVs. You know, and as opposed to the way I grew up, where I was underneath a poncho with a red lunch flashlight in my mouth with the rain beating down, listening to a Prick 77. Okay, and somehow we managed to get from A to B. I wouldn't want that. I don't think we're going to get to that point. But we're working what we call, what's the baseline comm that we're going to need? What can we rely on all the time? And then everything above that becomes a benefit.
Okay, so I think everybody gets the sense of what the Commandant's talking about there, which is protecting your own infrastructure, much of it located in space, and
yes,
blasting the other guy's infrastructure in space, right, with our Space Corps.
And guess what we're doing thus far in order to protect our satellite infrastructure and mount offensive assets in space?
Nothing.
Jack shit. We're doing nothing.
Thank you.
You know, Congress wanted to initiate a Space Force. I understand the complaints against it being the overhead expenditures associated with a new branch. The logistics of it are daunting. I get that. But the Air Force is doing a shitty job right now of managing space as a battle space. You know, they established a joint Space Force. They gave the commander of that joint Space Force a seat at the table when the Air Force is divvying out its budget. But ultimately, we're still doing nothing and analyzing things that maybe we ought to do. And it's important to note that Russia and China both mounted their own space-specific military branches in 2015. They know space is a war zone. American defense officials know space is a war zone. America is doing nothing about it.
Who's when you say America, who do you mean? Don't go Madison on me.
Primarily lawmakers. Primarily lawmakers. And Congress and the Senate.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I just want to get to that.
The general in charge of CENTCOM, I'm blanking on his name right now, but the general in charge of CENTCOM recently said, China's about 10 years away from operationalizing space. At best, America is 50. Now, it's important to note that China didn't
that.
Even put a person.
His name,
I believe it completely, man.
His name,
what are we doing?
His name's Vogel, by the way. All we need to do is put some lasers on the space shuttle, and we just weaponize space.
We don't have a space shuttle. We don't even have a rocket.
Look,
the SLS is going to
launch. Look, it's not like we don't have a model. Just like we go into museums and we search for spare parts for F-18s and CH-53s, we go into the museums, we roll out the space shuttle, we fuel that bitch up.
First and foremost, space shuttle, if we're going to do it with like the Saturn V. The space shuttle was horribly inefficient. It was not a very good platform.
I don't care.
It was not cost effective.
I'm not a fighter pilot. I don't care if it's cost effective. I just need the bitch in space, and I need it to blast some satellites so I poke their eyes out. So then
you don't actually even need a laser, really. You just need a grappling arm. All you got to do is nudge a satellite to make it stop working.
I know. No. I'm not going to do that. I'm not playing that game. Okay, I'm blowing it up. Okay, his eyes
are not projectiles and not lasers.
That's fine. I don't care. We'll use a projectile.
Okay.
We'll use a projectile. And so then his 1,000-mile gun, Like, start painting it, and because it's now a museum piece, just like some of the huge mortars that were used in the siege of Vicksburg, and just like the Maginot Line. It's a great concept, but when I put this thing together, and in a peer event, when I poke your eyes out, what good is that? It's no good.
You know, and poking your eyes out is the biggest point here. I think people don't realize that when we talk about, you know, when you see a news break, when you get a notification on your phone that North Korea just launched a ballistic missile, and it's on a trajectory that might take it to Japan or over Japan, right? If you work in my line of work, you know, I'm using some other things. I'm using data miner and other things to track it in real time. But if you work in my line of work, that's 17 minutes of flight time to Japan, or whatever it may be. You're watching it with bated breath to find out if we're going to be in a war. You know, I've called the poor public affairs duty Lance Corporal a million times out there in Japan to be like, hey, do you have any confirmation on where these missiles splashed down? Did they splash down? And he'll always tell me, I can't tell you anything. We don't have any information. And then I'm like, all right, man, are you wearing a fucking Kevlar right now? Like, did they bring flak jackets into your office? And but most recently when I asked him that, he's like, no. And I was like, well, then we're not at war. That's all I needed to know. And I hung up the phone. Because if Japan had been struck, I'd imagine people would be panicking in Japan right now.
No. If anybody who's watched the Godzilla movie knows that what will happen in Japan. It'll be like, we've all seen that before.
So when we get those early notices of a launch, what really happened is a satellite that we have in orbit identified the heat signature of an ICBM launch, right? That satellite relayed the information to a ground-based station that then relayed that information to a command element that almost always is not co-located with where the information is first received. That means that when the launch happens, the information is tracked by a satellite and then conveyed via other satellites in order to get to us, for us to know that there's a bird in the air or a missile in the air. Now, if you hinder or, God help us, destroy our satellite infrastructure, all you have to do is blind it for a minute. All it takes is a minute for us to no longer be able to mount a counter-missile defensive situation. THAAD relies on radar. We can rely on THAAD as long as we identify a launch. Otherwise, by the time THAAD is able to determine the trajectory and get a good lock on it, it's already too far into its arc for THAAD to do us any good anymore. Maybe Aegis can help, as long as we identify with the satellite. Maybe the MDS can help if it's heading towards America. The MDS has got a really bad track record. We've got a lot of technical issues with our CONUS domestic missile defense apparatus. All of this relies on satellites. It does not take much to completely eliminate our ability to track these missiles via satellite. You don't have to do it permanently. You don't have to destroy anything. All you've got to do is dazzle them for a few minutes. China already does it with, they have these ground-based lasers that they use to track space debris with. They already do, we call it shining our satellites. They'll point their ground-based lasers at our satellites. The lasers are not powerful enough to interfere with us at all, but what we can do is we go, someone's shining a laser right on our lens. Someone's shining a laser right on our heat sensors. It doesn't do much to us now, but we're aware that they have the ability to, A, shine a laser right on our satellite from the ground, and B, they have this methodology already in place. All they need to do is turn the volume up on those lasers to weaponize them. Not to destroy a satellite, just to mess with it. All it's got to do is confuse us for a minute. A minute is really all it takes to throw a wrench in the gears of our missile defense apparatus. That's a big problem. It becomes a bigger problem, though, when you think in terms of conventional warfare, where our sailors, because of sequestration and because of continual resolution spending, don't have the training they need to operate their ships under normal circumstances. They're crashing into commercial vessels due to a lack of training. They don't know how to drive their boats.
I reject your conclusion.
That's not mine. That's the Navy's conclusion. Trust me.
I have, and their conclusions are wrong. Okay?
I disagree.
They have the training. They don't have the leadership. They don't have a boot people. First of all, this bullshit, you know, 100-hour work week. Anybody who's been deployed knows, divide 100 by 7, and what number do you get? You get 14. 14 hours a day gives you 10 free hours a day. Really? 100-hour work week while deployed, that's onerous? That's bullshit. If you have 10 free hours a day, give me a break. But when in their free time, what do you think they're doing? They're watching cable TV, they're on the internet, they're playing video games. Where's the goddamn supervision that goes with, first, why can't Hollings stay awake? Hollings, get your ass to bed, come see me in 6 hours, all right? Go get me McNamara. McNamara, you're driving the ship now. Yes, Master Chief. Now I'm driving the ship. Where are those guys? All right? Because you're not missing it by a little bit. You're missing it by a lot. And both of them were just reckless in their leadership. Not their training. It's like, oh, we got to do this. We got to make sure people sleep. Bullshit. You got to become the Navy you used to be. All right? With leaders that give a shit and yoke people up and make them do their jobs. It's stupid.
Now, leadership matters, and you're right, and that's why the commanders of both ships were charged. But I'm not sure if it was the Fitzgerald or the McCain, but when you read the testimony, the guy at the helm transferred control for the ship to another workstation on the bridge, and no one realized it.
It was McCain, and they did that 3 different times, okay? And it was a captain of the ship.
No.
Let me tell you, it's a leadership issue because he got told by his XO and his OPSO, hey, you need to set the sea and anchor detail earlier as we go through the Moluccan Straits because it's the most experienced navigators, helmsmen on the ship, and they'll be in position. He said, no, that's all right. We don't need to do that.
You should not need the most experienced helmsman on the ship to not drive into a car.
I don't know that I would disagree with you, but when we entered the most heavily transited piece of water in the world, you might want those son of a bitches driving the ship. That's just me.
I tell you what, I disagree with you, though,
because I think
if you've got a helmsman on your boat, you ought to be able to trust that helmsman to drive the boat. I don't think that you should be setting your schedule based on which guys are good at it. They should be fucking good at it.
Oh, my God. Here we go with the little engine that could. All engines
that's
can
That's not
do-
the little engine. That's the big system. The big system is just training our people.
All engines can pull that load up that hill, sir.
You're telling me that the Navy's training apparatus is the little engine that could, or maybe you just not really have a good argument against that.
Well,
because honestly,
we can all do
there's
it.
No excuse for there being a helmsman on the boat that can't drive the boat.
If we all work together and try really hard, we can do this. Bullshit, man. Not everybody can do it. Not everybody's good at it. And that's why the
if you went through the occupational specialty, if that's your job, it's your job to be good at it. Why are you on the boat with that job if you can't do it?
Because some people suck.
Then don't put them at the steering wheel of a destroyer.
No.
He's supposed to be.
He's the little engine that could. Everybody's supposed to be able to do it because they went through the school.
You shouldn't pass the school if you can't drive a boat.
Oh,
I mean, if you're an infantry guy, people pass the school all the time. Yes, and that's a problem.
Thank you. That's right. But there's leaders that are in all these different organizations that are designed to recognize that and make sure the right people are doing the right things. The right people, and if you're not up to stuff, that you're getting the training, and that's a leadership issue. And the Navy has allowed so much of this, and they've looked sideways for so long that they have a leadership issue, and they want to go back and say we have a systems issue. No, you got a leadership issue,
and they want to call it an op tempo issue too, which is also bullshit, just as you pointed out. But no, you're 100% right. I think I'm 100% right. It's a leadership and it's a training issue.
No, you're wrong. Okay, let's just get this straight right now.
I am convinced that you can put Captain Kirk on the helm of the bridge, but if the person at the helm doesn't know how to drive the boat, you're still in trouble.
I know.
Right? Captain Kirk is an incredible leader.
But he graduated from school, so he's supposed to. So he should be an interchangeable piece.
Yeah, but if you're a good leader, you ought to be able to. Well, you just said that they should put their best helmsman there when they're in heavy traffic.
Yes,
that's true. You should. You probably do have a best helmsman.
Thank you.
But you should not have any helmsman that doesn't know how to drive the boat. that doesn't know when he's transferred the ship to another workstation.
I do. I'm sorry. What do I tell you?
Well, that's the training issue. You want to train your fucking sailors.
I have shitty helmsmen. I know I should, but I suck as a CO, so I've got. But let me tell you, everybody's sexual harassment classes are up to date. That's a fact. I can tell you.
Here's one thing you and I are going to agree with. Yeah, 100%. You better believe EEO training is good.
Exactly. Right, because let me tell you, I'm not crazy. Like, I might not be the brightest bulb in the chandelier, but I know that, you know, driving the ship comes second to sexual harassment training and making sure that
I don't want to misconstrue this. Sexual harassment is an issue. It's a big deal. However, it's not that big a deal if your sailors are dead.
And 17 of them, the Antietam runs aground in Tokyo Bay. In Tokyo Bay, the Antietam runs aground in broad daylight. The USS Lake Champlain collides with a 70-foot Korean fishing vessel at noon off the coast of Korea. The Fitzgerald runs into a tanker that it sees forever.
Open water at night that it sees forever.
And then the McCain drives in front of a tanker that's driving through the Moluccan Straits, going straight forever.
That's been trying
forever.
To initiate communications with them.
Yeah.
Agreed. This is, but again, honestly, I think that this goes back to the same problems we're talking about with aircraft, which is that we're not throwing money at training. We're not, maintenance isn't really an issue when it comes to these ships, but we're not throwing the money into the right, you know, holes. I think every boat's a money pit. Not the Navy. We need the Navy.
No,
but we're,
I think
we're
the
not
Navy,
the
Navy
that
has had,
sure that our guys are fighting.
The Navy has been in a cultural decline for decades. All right? Everything from physical fitness, right, to leadership, it's just, if you've been around the Navy, it's sorry. Okay? It's sorry. And they needed, sadly, it had to come to this for them, and they're lucky that there's a guy that is the Secretary of Defense who will put them on the right track. But they need to re-inject some discipline. They need to re-inject some nastiness. It is the history of the United States Navy, and they need to get their shit together because the nation needs them, as we're seeing. China just told Australia, you know, last week, get out of the South China Sea. You don't belong here.
Yeah.
We
the
own.
The South China Sea is where the World War III starts, man.
Right. We own this. In if you look at in simply in the early bird today, and if you scroll way down to international affairs, all right, India is having a summit with China. India is not cool with the Belt and Roads Initiative, and they've said as much. Okay.
And they really shouldn't be.
Malaysia's. Yeah. Headline from the Asia Times, Malaysia's election is a de facto vote on how Malaysia will relate to China and the nine dash line in which China has told Malaysia, Vietnam, and the Philippines, you don't own your economic exclusion zone off your coast, you
nope.
share it with
They've
us.
They've thrown Vietnamese guys off their own oil platform.
Exactly. Exactly.
Insane. Insane. And this is, the Navy really is, and I hate to say it as a Marine, the Navy is the most important branch of the military as we move towards these near-peer and peer-level conflicts like Russia and China potentially could be. China doesn't have a blue water Navy yet. China's not going to send its one, you know, Soviet-era carrier. I mean, I know they just launched the Type 001. That's not operational. They're not going to send their Soviet-era carrier to American shores to fight it out. The South China Sea is where a third of all global commerce transits. They don't need to take the war to us. All they got to do is take over the South China Sea, as they've already tried to do diplomatically, and are working feverishly to do with force. You know, it's what we're looking at. China's going to be the big bad that we once thought Russia was. That's the future.
Already is. They just rolled their aircraft carrier from the South China Sea to the East China Sea and started conducting live fire exercises, and that's a message to the Chinese. At some point, we are going to weaponize these islands that we've been fighting with you, just like we did in the South China Sea, and what are you going to do?
Oh, they're already weaponizing the islands. They're already doing it.
No.
Airstrips on them?
In the East China Sea.
Oh, in the East Tennessee. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, that's, we're a day closer to it. And just so you know, Japan, there's not shit you can do about it. And the Americans, they might send a destroyer to drive by, but they're not doing shit
about it either. Yeah, we'll do a phone-op mission, but we're not doing anything either. We're puffing our chests out. You know, people don't realize how large the Chinese military infrastructure is. I was reading this thing the other day about in Argentina, these huge satellite dishes just kind of popped up, seemingly out of nowhere. You know, we had, like, satellite imagery of this middle of the jungle area of Argentina from one year, and then we looked at it again from another, and there are these three huge satellite dishes that have been put in. Turns out, if you trace it back far enough, they're owned by the Chinese government.
Of course.
What they're doing, they're using it to track geosynchronous satellites that are traveling in north-south, you know, like from like a polar satellite orbit.
Right.
They're exactly aligned with Washington, D.C., with where they are, so that they can see the polar orbit satellites that the United States is using in a way that they can't see them from where they are. Because there's two or three satellite dishes, they can also identify exactly where the satellite is, which could give them targeting data if they needed it. People, I mean, China just opened up a new base in Djibouti. China's got a global footprint. It's not as big as America's, but it's growing fast.
Listen to this.
We were so worried about Russian expansion, we're looking at China's
Russia,
expansion.
Come on. Russia's got an economy smaller than Canada.
Russia can't afford a war.
Right. Russia's
That's bored. Why I'm not worried about their stupid, their new fancy pants missiles either. They can't afford to build them.
Whatever. You're right. I'm with you. They're a second rate power. At some point, they will get their pants pulled down. And what we honestly need...
We just did it in Syria. They talked all week, and then we launched missiles, and they didn't do anything.
But you know what?
Watching a propaganda effort.
I don't believe they didn't do anything. I think they didn't do anything on purpose. I think they were collecting with their platforms.
Yep. And, I would agree.
What are the Americans doing? I've got
a prediction for you that I can leave you on about the Syria thing, actually.
Okay, give it
to
me.
So, you know, initially, Russia said that Soviet-era Syrian air defenses shot down 71 inbound missiles, right? The Defense Department said you didn't shoot down any. Now, yesterday, another official Russian statement came out saying they didn't shoot down 71, they shot down 83. So according to them, of the 105, 83 were shot down, according to them, effectively neutering the offense. There's no evidence whatsoever to suggest that that's true. However, Russia also said that two of the missiles, one was a Tomahawk and one they didn't identify, but was an air-to-surface cruise missile, which means it was either like our JASSM or the JASSM or England's Storm Shadow missile. Both are pretty advanced missiles fielded, you know, in the last couple of years. They claim that they're taking these back to Moscow to reverse engineer.
Right.
The DOD came out immediately and they were like, 83 is even more ridiculous than 71, especially because they only launched 40 interceptors after the fact. So every interceptor they launched would have had to take out at least two missiles for that number to be accurate. So obviously it's bullshit. But the Pentagon also said, we had no failures in our missiles, and there's no way Russia has captured any of the failed missiles to take back to reverse engineer. And their evidence to cite that was that Russia didn't show any evidence. I think that there's a good chance that out of those 105 missiles, maybe one or two of them did have a technical failure. Maybe one or two of them didn't detonate. Maybe Russia did get their hands on one or two of them. That's less than a 2% failure rate. I'll buy it. But what Russia did by making the claim without providing any evidence is they gave us an opportunity to refute it and say you're lying. So in the next couple of days, expect Russia to release pictures of these missiles that they captured. They did this on purpose because they think that by telling you, look, America lied, some of their missiles did fail, we have one, it's going to bolster the credibility of all their bullshit claims about intercepts. It's a game. They're playing a perception management game.
Okay, let me. Whenever we talk about Russia, this is the music that gets played, okay? So, cue the music. Okay, the Russians are liars, okay?
Yes, thank you. They are.
It's a carnival.
Not only are they liars, but they're not even that good at it. They just do it so much.
Yeah. Cue the carnival music, okay? So Russia, you know, again, now weapons inspectors finally got to these cities. Well, look, those
weeks after Syrian and Russian forces had control over
those agents only last for 14 days.
Surprise, surprise! You know, there were UN inspectors on the ground ready to go in and investigate 48 hours after the alleged attack. Russia and Syrian forces barred them entrance, then Russia released a press release saying it was a UN decision. The United Nations, this is the problem with counter-narratives. That story broke. Hours later, the United Nations releases a press release saying, that's not true. We tried to go in and they wouldn't let us. Nobody runs that story. Everybody runs the initial one. Russia is not necessarily good at managing the narrative, but what they are is invested in it. And when you're the type of person that just kind of catches the news as you peruse it when you're walking by the TV, which most Americans are, it's not a problem.
They don't care.
It's really easy for it's really easy for you to not know. It's easy for you to start to believe that maybe America framed Assad for this, even though that's a ludicrous idea, especially since we really didn't do anything in our airstrike against them. Right. It was a pat on the bottom. It was a symbolic move. But it's easy to start to misconstrue propaganda fed in from foreign governments as the truth, because it gets reported by the news as the truth until it gets refuted. And that means you need to be following the news close enough to see the initial point and the counterpoint. Nobody does.
I know. Look, the Situation Room, okay? Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room? I've always said, thank God real life isn't like that. Breathless and out of control. Because if it was, you would never be able to do it. It would be too much. It would simply be too much. The Alex Hollings, my guest, in a breathless almost 2 hours of talking about things that I'm not even sure we talked about today. We talked about the nation on a course of doom. I believe, Alex.
On the course towards a better tomorrow, I like to hope.
The little engine that could. Right. Alex is selling the little engine that could. And then we're talking about peer-to-peer war and poking somebody else's eyes out, and then what comes in the aftermath once you get your satellites poked out. Then we go back to...
Hey, what, nothing good.
Well, we go back to radar. And then when you light your radar off, then you're going to get a radiation-seeking missile shot at it. So you're going
to
have...
Not only that, though, but we need our guys in the fight to be trained to competently handle a satellite-denied area. We just had a big Air Force initiative out in the West 2 or 3 months ago where they operated all of it satellite dark, right? And, of course, according to us, it all went swimmingly. We did a great job, accomplished all of our objectives in the training up the revolution. We're not going to say if we didn't. We need to be doing a lot more of that.
But
just
let me
like the Commandant said, we need to be training to assume we won't have it.
But what happens is, you can go as far as you can. It's old-fashioned pre-satellite operations, which are you can go as far as you can launch, fly, tank, go back to the ship. That's your radius. You're not going to have, perfect knowledge of what's out in front of you. You are going to have aviation encounters that are chance meeting engagements, and you're going to go from that because you're not going to have...
Which is going to be something that we haven't seen. We haven't fought a war like that since, World War II. Aviation encounters that you don't see coming, that's... It's the kind of warfare that I'm concerned that we don't even have the apparatus in place to train for. Because we don't have anybody still alive who ever had to do it. And that's a concern that I have. I don't just mean, dogfighting against a surprise opponent, but I mean, when I went through land nav and stuff like that, we did it all with compasses and with maps and shit like that. But after I made it through land nav, I never touched one again. I mean, I touched them, sure. But we relied on GPS for everything that I did.
Okay.
Now I hope that that's a culture shift and we're moving back. I hope that now in the Marine Corps it's not quite like that.
I think it is because every article that you read every day talks about more robotics, cyber, We have cyber Marines now. What are they going to do when there is no cyber?
But we do need to have them, though. Need to have them because Russia's got cyber soldiers and China's got them.
I'm sure we need them.
We need to meet them in that battle space.
I'm sure
we need to meet them in the battle space.
I'm sure we
need
them.
You're right. Once the lights go off,
what do they do?
There won't be much good to us.
Give those dorks a rifle and send them to the field.
Hey! I said it to my wife the other day. I was like,
I didn't sign up for this.
We wouldn't know. The lights would just turn off one day, and they wouldn't come back on. And I'd go, I hope wherever that war is going on that we're winning. We wouldn't even know, because you always say, if World War III came on, I'd go jump back in my boots. I probably wouldn't even hear about it. You know, I'd be out here living in the woods with no electricity for a year and a half before anybody got here to say,
hey, man,
we won the war.
Looking for that arsonist. Yeah. Kevin Costner rolls up and says, hey, dude, can I have some water?
He comes here just to do a really shitty impression of Shakespeare, and then for some reason we base a society on it.
Exactly. Then you know, then you notice his tattoo, and you're like, what's up, bro? The, no, I will tell you what. To me, what's really interesting is in peer-to-peer war, what happens to the satellites, and when it goes dark, and you look around, and you're like, okay. And it takes
our GPS infrastructure is so dated, it wouldn't even take much. A strong gust of wind. Not that there's wind in space.
But let me just
tell
you.
We're working on now.
But I don't think we're as screwed as the Chinese. Let's just say we fight the Chinese.
That's fair.
I think the Chinese are more screwed because they have one carrier, right?
Yep.
We have
the GPS satellites, for instance, belong to us.
We have a bunch of them. Okay, let's just say they all go dark, and we go back to World War II. You know, we launch the radar, we launch our AWACS, right? We have we have a link between the AWACS and the aircraft carrier, and so that's how we extend our radar range. We're good at that. We can do that kind of war. That's 19.
Absolutely, but that's what they start having to worry about. Because if they use aircraft as a targeting apparatus for their anti-ship missiles, we're still in trouble trying to take the fight to them.
Hold on. If they use aircraft as an apparatus, say that again.
If they're using for instance.
Yes.
If you have a hardened communications network between aircraft and waterborne assets, they don't have to be ships. You know, they could be boats, they could be drones.
Right.
If you have a hardened, dedicated connection to them that isn't satellite-based,
okay.
You could still use that to triangulate a target, right? And for instance, these DF-21.
Hold on.
China just started mounting them on.
Hold on. How are they going to acquire that without an aerial presence? They can't.
Well, that's true. But as long as they have an aerial presence, then they can.
Oh, so,
you know?
So their air force is going to come up and they're going to fight us peer to peer. They'll get smoked.
Well, here's a great example. We've got 187 operational F-22s. Two fewer now because we just crashed two in Alaska, right? 187 of them. China's J-20 is not as capable as the F-22, even though it's a ripoff of it. However, their construction infrastructure still exists, which means they'll have more J-20s than we have F-22s very soon. It doesn't matter if the F-22 is a little better. If they have 10 of them for every one that we have. It doesn't, they're fielding the J-31 here very soon, which is their ripoff of the F-35, which don't get me started because that doesn't work very well anyway. China isn't able always to match our technological capability, but they are able to out-manufacture us. And that's a concern. I'm not saying it means they win. I mean, it's something that we need to bear in mind. When it comes to we have this notion of American air superiority.
Yeah.
We're gaps 25% of our Air Force fighters.
Yeah.
You know, we've got birds.
There's a caveat. There's a caveat there, assuming that we can get over 50% of our aircraft in the air. There's a caveat there.
Yeah, assuming we can make them operational. Absolutely.
Okay, which is a
assuming we start taking delivery of F-35s again, which we're not right now.
Right.
Yesterday, the F-35 plant in Italy went on strike.
So there's a few, I will grant you, there's a few footnotes that go with that caveat, okay? All right.
Because I'm not saying China wins, but I'm just saying there's concerns. We got to worry, you know?
All right, let me, here's an email. Helm, it's not the guy at the helm, exclamation mark. It's the guy, girl, at the con. Okay.
All right. Semantic arguments aside, they still ought to be trained.
Right. But it's going to vary, so that's why we have a C and anchor detail. And when you don't set it and you're in the busiest piece of water in the world, you get what you get. All right? That's just stupid. I can fix a lot of things. I can't fix stupid. Okay?
Yeah,
here's another one. AGs. Ensign. Oh, his daughter's a surface warfare officer. That's where this hate's coming from. I love it when Alex is squaring your shit away. How is he didn't square my shit away.
I don't know. I feel like I did a pretty good job squaring your shit away, but you know.
What?
Listen, man, you come off as a pessimist. You're a cynic. Nobody wants a cynic.
Oh, we all want to buy the propaganda of the little engine that could.
Oh,
because we all know.
Home. That's America, man. That's the American dream.
We all know that fairy tale happens all the time. And that if you keep going out and buying those lottery tickets, you might win. Hey, Mac, you can't win if you don't play. Yeah, you're right.
Dude, listen to this. A couple of years ago, I was working in an HR office at a defense contractor.
Yeah.
In a nice little corner office, wearing khakis and a tie every day and hating life. I threw everything away. I decided to be real poor on the prospect that maybe one day I could write for a living. And now I'm a senior staff writer, and I'm still poor, but I'm a lot less poor.
So you're using yourself now. Living proof.
I'm living my version of the American dream. Right. That was hope, man. If I didn't have hope, I'd still be in HR.
You just crossed the line here. You're using yourself as an example of the little engine that could. I'm done with you.
Well, I am the little engine. I'm a big ass. I'm a big ass dude. But mentality-wise, I'm a little engine that could.
Unbelievable. All right, Alex.
I don't know, man. I know this guy that runs an all-marine radio show that
He's a pessimist.
He wasn't always a radio host, but he's damn good at it now.
And he's a pessimist, too. Okay, just so you know. He's pessimistic. And, I don't, like, if you can tell me how it works that this nation, what happens to convince the Republicans and the Democrats that you should pass budgets? What happens to the Republicans then Democrats that says, hey, you should come together, fix the southern border, okay, so we can deal with the Dreamers, so we can give the other 11 million people that we're not going to deport, and oh, by the way, message to Breitbart and to Steve Bannon, they won't self-deport either, to give them some kind of legal status after they plead guilty to some new statute we enact, and they're allowed to stay in the country as long as they don't get into trouble permanently. They have some, so we can get beyond this shit, but, oh, by the way, we're not going to recreate it again because now we have better security on that border, and now we're going to reform our legal immigration. Holy shit, because all these people that are at the doorstep of the border today, if they come here as refugees, guess what? They're not going home. It's not the way we do it.
I'm going to bolster your pessimistic view here to a certain degree.
Thank you.
I think that one of the reasons why you see so much focus on this stuff is, I really wish I could name specifically what it was, but it's kind of famous now. It was a public hearing that was initially about putting in a new nuclear reactor just to weaponize uranium. And then as the hearing progressed, it moved on to where they were going to put bike stands, or whether or not they would put bike stands in this new government facility to try to encourage people to ride bikes to work. They spoke for like 7 minutes on whether or not they were going to put this new, plutonium reactor in their area, and they spoke for like 4 hours about whether or not they were going to put the bike stands in. The reason is because one's an intimidating subject, so nobody feels smart enough to talk about it, so they just talk over. The other one is one that you can easily pick a team on, and we love to argue. You know, and that's the way America's kind of approaching things right now. We don't want to talk about the South China Sea. We don't want to talk about the possibility of a proxy war in Syria. We want to talk about Stormy Daniels. I can pick a team on that real easy. You know, we tend to avoid complex issues because it's hard to get all riled up about them. You know, and until we can get past that, and that's I think a really big hurdle to bolster your pessimistic view, until we can get past that knee-jerk reaction, that want for rage, we're in a lot of trouble. You know?
I think you have to eliminate political parties. I think we have to, after whatever bad thing happens, and we rethink this experiment in democracy, we're going to make certain modifications. That is, we're going to federalize the election system. We'll come up with a way you qualify, and then everybody has
to. Campaign finance reform would be legitimate at that point.
Yeah,
which would be legitimate.
It's going to be a level playing field. Just because you're successful in this country doesn't mean that you get a greater say in the outcome of an election. That's not your constitutional right. We'll have four televised debates in states and at the federal level, and all the candidates that qualify will come. We'll vote on the weekend when most people are free, so hopefully the turnout numbers go up, and we'll do common sense thing. Well, also...
Oh, and I've got one more caveat to add to this, though, because this is a whole lot of responsibility to place on the system to fix itself. People need to become engaged.
Oh my God. You need
to give a shit about your local elections. You need to give a shit about your state elections. Here's a great example. Our ambassador to the UN right now is Nikki Haley. Yeah. A lot of people think Nikki Haley ought to run for president, right?
Nikki Haley
was a governor.
Right.
She was a governor before.
Right.
If you were in the state that Nikki Haley was the governor of, was it Alabama? I don't remember.
Stop.
If you were in the state that Nikki Haley was the governor of, you are sure as hell ought to know that your former governor is the UN ambassador.
South Carolina.
I'd be willing to bet a lot of people don't. South Carolina. I'd be willing to bet a lot of people don't. I bet you a lot of people don't know who the governor of their state is right now. Let alone their state representatives, their congressmen, the senators that represent them.
They didn't
vote for them, and they don't know who they are.
And you expect this group to self-reform and save the democracy?
I think that if the democracy needs to be saved, it's on no one's shoulders but our own.
Okay. There you go. Hence my conclusion that we're doomed.
And hence my conclusion that I hope we're not.
Okay.
All right? I have an optimistic perspective about Americans because I've seen them do some pretty rad shit.
Well, again, it's a small minority of Americans. So, when the next revolution comes, and it's coming, and we have the night of the pitchforks and torches, and we march on Washington, D.C., and tell them, we're tired of this shit, and we're going to come back, and the next time we come back, we're not coming back with pitchforks and torches. We're going to come back to occupy this son of a bitch because we fought for it. We're not going to watch it go down the shitter. And you all are taking it down the shitter.
If it comes to that, I'll march with you. But I have faith that it won't come to that.
All right, Pollyanna. This just in from the Associated Press. Senate votes 57-42 to confirm CIA Director Mike Pompeo to be Trump's second Secretary of State. So congratulations to former West Point graduate Mike Pompeo. He's now your Secretary of State. And Alex Hollings got to get back to work for SoftRep. Alex, always interesting to talk to you. What are you writing about next? And tell everybody where they find not only SoftRep but your work.
You got it. Well, first and foremost, you can find my work at SoftRep.com. I've always got something there on the front page. But if you just like me, you can go to SoftRep.com/authors/Alex Hollings. But let me tell you, there's some great writers over there. Luke Ryan's an Army Ranger. They've got former DIA, we've got everybody over there. There's lots of great stuff. But if you want to find me on social media, you can find me at facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter or Twitter, I'm just AlexHollings52. Pretty easy to find.
There you have it. Defense official to Congress on China's carrier killer missiles. We will not see them coming. Who wrote that?
Undersecretary of Defense. He's the Undersecretary of Defense in charge of research and development, and his name eludes me right now. My computer already went to sleep.
Who wrote that?
Oh, I wrote it. Yeah, I wrote that article. Come on, man. Are you looking at the hot on SoftRep? Because number one's me, number two's me. Some of the other ones are, other guys, I guess.
Nice. Well done.
I'm bragging now, man. It's cyclical. You know what I mean? This happens to be a good day for me.
Hey, would you do me a favor? Will you like a tweet that I just put out?
Hell yeah. Well, it depends on how pessimistic it is,
No, it's not. It is, if you look at the All Marine Radio Twitter feed, it's call to action, Marines vote for Invicta, which is Marine veteran entrepreneurs. In an inter-service entrepreneurial competition, what they do is they produce content that's based on the actions of military people. They tell their story for young people, and they're in a competition.
That's awesome, man. I'm not just gonna like that. I'm gonna retweet that. That's fantastic.
You're the man. Yeah, because it's a vote thing. So, and in inter-service competitions, who has to win, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, come on, guys. I mean, the show's called All Marine Radio.
That's right.
This is bias in media.
That's right. I've been asked, why don't you call it All Veteran Radio? And my response is...
Well, because I'm a Marine.
Yeah, my response is, what? Why would I do that? You're like, I'm sorry I asked. I'm like, I know. Why would you even ask such a stupid question? And it's like, you guys are out of control. And then now I say, no. Did you see the president of France when he came over and he brought think about it. He could have brought a sapling from Normandy.
Yeah.
I mean, hello, but he didn't. He brought a sapling from Belleau Wood.
And man, that's cool. That's cool. You know, I might make fun of France a lot, but that's a cool gesture. I like it.
Are you kidding me? And three times as many soldiers fought in Belleau Wood as Marines. But what was the story?
Absolutely.
It was a story. It was a gift to
the tuple hunting.
Yeah, like. Hello.
You know?
And look, and I feel bad that we, our narrative crushed everybody else's, but that's the way it is. I'm sorry.
Listen, I agree. But before I get off, I do want to point out, while we're talking so much about China, I do write a lot about China, but there is a person named Danielle Bizier who used to work DIA responsible for China and Northeast Asia primarily, aside from. She's doing a daily article about China. It's not getting the traction that I think it should, again, because people aren't that interested. Check out SoftRep every day in the late afternoon. You'll see something called the Sino Files, and it's all about China. I read it every day so that I can stay apprised. So it's well worth your time. If I'm going to plug somebody's work other than my own, it should be something that's important, and I think China is. So check that out, too. You know?
Well, let me just tell you. I have a guy named Grant Newsham that comes on the program, and he's kind of a Pacific Rim guy. And the bullshit that China is up to around the world is incredible. And if you follow it on a daily basis, there was great testimony by the Commandant and the Secretary of the Navy, and I believe it was the Secretary of the Navy that said, China has weaponized their economy. They invite you in. They set the hook deep with Chinese demand that increases production in your factories, creates second and third shifts. Right, all boats begin to rise in the area. This is great, and then they pinch it and they say, "Okay, here's what we want." That technology that goes with that needs to come to China. What?
It's all, you know, honestly, China, they use that same practice even when it comes to creating culture. They've invested a huge amount of money into Hollywood. They own like a 20% stake in Paramount at this point. But not only that, they have government censorship of all films that come into the country. So that's the reason why you're seeing so many movies now make $1 billion and suck, you know, like the Transformers. Because they do very well in China, where it's a huge market. But China has governmental control of how the country is represented in all films that are shown in China.
Yeah.
So China actually has a certain amount of control over the way some political things are presented in their movies already.
Wait a minute. A certain amount?
Yeah. Well, here's a good example. The most recent Mission Impossible movie showed a scene that was panning across a city in China that showed clotheslines on the top of these skyscrapers because they're really there. China forced the studio to use CGI to remove the clothing lines because they felt as though it represented China as impoverished. And they refused to let Mission Impossible release in China unless they did that. So what did the studio do? They did it. Because they want to make sure it released in China. It's the second biggest market in the world. You know, they made $80 million there. They don't want to lose that money. So they yield to Chinese governmental pressure. And it's important to note, America doesn't have that. We have the MPAA rating system, which is a private system. It's a pretty corrupt one at that, but it's not a governmental system. You know, it's a group of people who make these decisions privately. China's government decides how things are presented in movies that are released in China. And because it's such a huge market, Hollywood is yielding to that.
Well,
again, think about who's in charge of the narrative.
It's, but again, it's that same thing, and that is just perfect. We come as investors. We want to open up the Chinese market to distribution of your films, right?
Exactly, man.
And we're going to tell you how, and we're going to have to tell you how to make them. And when you balk at saying, hey, don't tell us what to put in the movies, and they simply say,
well, then you'll lose that $80 million.
Exactly. And they do the same thing with Boeing. And let me tell you, and if you watch the way they do it, and their whole Belt and Road thing, they're gonna use $1 trillion to create infrastructure around the world, right, to allow them to get to places easier and open things up, right? Those aren't grants. Those are loans. If you default on a loan, guess who owns your port?
100%. China is positioning itself to be the global diplomatic leader, And people think diplomacy is talking. Diplomacy is pressure.
Yeah. The global gangster, because that's what they are.
Exactly.
And if you want,
exactly,
if you want, and again, the lesson we're all going to learn again is the only way you can have peace, sustained peace, is through strong alliances. The alliance in the Pacific, Japan's got to weaponize. The alliance in Europe,
yep,
Germany's got to weaponize. All right, and that, and put Putin in a box. And when NATO then says, after Germany restores its military, and NATO looks east and says, just stop it, okay? What is Putin going to say? There's nothing he can say or do. Nothing.
You're right, man.
Nothing.
You're right. You know, and Matt says it all the time, which is how you know you're right. But, you know, alliances are the safest and most secure way to get peace.
But they can't be weak.
And
they can't be weak.
Exactly.
They have to be legit.
It can't be with a country like Germany. It's got to, you know.
Freeloaders.
France actually has a very formidable military.
Freeloaders.
France's military is really, you know, the UK's as well. But a lot of NATO isn't there.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'll tell you what, it's wrong when the EU's largest economic power doesn't have a military and relies,
yes,
on other nations to guarantee its pacifist bullshit stand. And
it's a cultural problem in Germany, you know what I mean?
They're afraid
of militarism.
Get over it.
I get it. Yeah, agreed. You need to.
We got it. World War II is 100 years in the rearview mirror, okay? You got pretty strong democratic institutions.
Japan is only now making that transition
as well.
You know?
But they,
they're
least,
just now revising their constitution.
But at least they're making it, right? And so
do you think
Germany would notice that and say, you know what? Trump called us out for our lack of a military and our lack of funding of our military. Japan is now tolling more of their share of the load and modifying their constitution and looking at, you know, setting up their first amphibious force since World War II, blah, blah, blah. Do you think it's time that we shouldered our fair share of the burden here relative
to... That's true, man. That's right. Angela Merkel likes to fancy herself as a world leader. Mattis, again, says it all the time. The way that diplomacy works is because you've got force behind it. If you don't have force behind it, diplomacy doesn't mean anything.
Right. Question to Stalin. What do you think of what the Pope said, blah, 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 blah? Stalin's response. How many divisions does the Pope have?
You know, I hadn't heard that before. That's good. That's good.
Answer?
Oh, that
is... None. I don't give a shit what that guy says. Okay?
Yeah, I had never heard that before, but I'm going to steal that, just like your question that I stole from my interview this week. This time I'll cite you.
If you don't cite me, you're an unethical journalist, which would make you fit into the rest of the shit bags.
I'm just trying to live the dream.
I don't have any problem with that. All right, Alex Hollings from Soft Rep in a shit show for the last 2.5 hours. Alex,
it's been a blast, though, man.
No, always fun. Have a good day. Thanks, bud.
Yeah, you too, brother.
Yeah. I don't know how we... How do you do a two-hour and 20-minute segment and follow the range of subjects that happen when... It's like a machine gun when Alex comes on. That's right. It's like a machine gun that goes off. All right. Muscleman? Who? No, he was teaching today. For those of you who miss your dose of the gunner, Mike Pompeo did get confirmed as your next Secretary of State. So you have that going for you today. Thanks for listening on a Tuesday. Here's another email. Entitled Hollywood. 60 Minutes did a story on China's influence in Hollywood. Oh, they have it. 60 Minutes. It's again, the Secretary of the Navy's right. They have weaponized their economy, and unless the Western nations stand together, they will all hang separately. And again, if you... the story in the early bird, kind of interesting. This and It's just considered like a whole page of links when you look at the early bird. And the article is entitled "Malaysia's Election: A De Facto Vote on China." Okay, I'll just read you the first paragraph. All right. When Malaysians head to the polls on May 9th, their choice will also determine the nation's future relations with China. Mahathir Mohamad, the four-party opposition alliance's non-agenarian. I don't even know what that means. A person who is from 90 to 99 years old. Holy shit. Mahathir Mohamad, the four-party opposition alliance, non-90-year-old prime ministerial candidate and a previous premier, is campaigning, in part, on resetting Malaysia's ties with China. A relationship, he says, has become too one-sided under incumbent Prime Minister Najib Razak. In a recent media interview, Mahathir vowed, if elected, to put Chinese investments under greater scrutiny, saying the Chinese companies would be welcome to set up operations in Malaysia, provided they hire locals while bringing in capital and technology. The former premier said in an interview that Malaysians currently gain nothing from China's investment in the company because China brings their own workers. That's how it works. China dictates the terms. So, anyway, so articles like that all abound. It's absolutely stunning when you look at the what China does on a daily basis. I'd encourage you to put in some kind of Google alert or whatnot, and just the stories of their aggressiveness around the world. So, one more email entitled "Your Pessimism." I don't think you're as pessimistic as you are realistic. The law of inertia says that something will stay in motion until acted upon by a greater force. What is the greater force that changes the trajectory of our current political climate in Congress? I don't see one. That does not bode well for the nation. Does not bode well for the world, for that matter. I think we should all be concerned. And I think, Mac, you are more realist than you are pessimist. And I think historically, your opinion on what creates change in a nation is valid. Most nations do not change unless an external force imperils their existence, and after that, nations reform themselves. I guess we shall see. I share your realistic view of current events in the United States. It's very, 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 hold on, there's only three more. Very, very, very discouraging. What substitutes for leadership in the United States today is pathetic. God help us all. Wow. You know what? I like that. What substitutes for leadership today in the United States is pathetic. God help us all. Well said. Well said. All right. This program repeats itself momentarily. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. So, on a Thursday, All Marine Radio. Out.